through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, Jake has been getting us ready for the draft by profiling a couple different picks that will be available potentially for the Seahawks at pick number 56 overall. And that's been the key to his draft prospect profiles. He's not only looking for guys that could be a fit for Seattle's offense or defense, but he's not looking at Ja'Marr Chase. He's not looking at Trevor Lawrence in a very fascinating quarterback controversy that would be. He's looking at guys that could actually be there in the late second round, potentially the early third round. Maybe they fall out and maybe they're in the early second round, or maybe they slip a little lower. These are all guys that are feasible. And that means that they're all guys that you, Seahawks fans, can be watching for on draft day, particularly on day two, a week from today, when the Seahawks are going to be on the board with their first pick in the second round, or 56 overall. So with that being said, it's time for another Seahawks draft prospect profile, this one on four defensive backs.
This is Jake and Stacy's off-season profile. A look at the key free agents, potential draft picks, and extension candidates for the Hawks championship run.
Let's go!
Draft profile.
All right. Yesterday, we talked about electric small slot receivers. Today we are going to talk about cornerbacks, and I've got two guys that we haven't profiled yet that I think could be second, third round selections, and then I'm going to give you two guys that I think are intriguing later in the draft. So the Seahawks also have a fourth round selection and a seventh round selection, so I could easily see them in this draft taking with their fourth round selection a corner. So I'll give you who I think could fall down to that realm as well. So the two guys that I want to highlight that are going to be early on in the process is going to be, first, Aaron Robinson out of Central Florida. Yes, could they take another corner out of Central Florida, replace Shaquille Griffin, who was drafted from UCF, and get another guy who also has dreads? They have a type. Yes, they could potentially do that with Aaron Robinson. And Aaron Robinson ran a blistering 4.3 40 in his pro day. And I think with Aaron Robinson, he's a guy that is a playmaker. He's a guy that can play all over the field. His junior year, he had 5.5 tackles for loss, 54 tackles, 10 pass breakups. This is a guy that finds his way around the football. And that's one of the things that I really like about Aaron Robinson a lot. And I think one of the things that you look at Robinson is, yeah, some people might profile him as maybe a nickel corner. I don't see him as that. I see him with the potential and athletic ability to play on the outside because he has great instincts. He is fast. He is, when you talk about that 4.3 40 speed, sometimes guys don't translate. You don't see it out on the field. You see his speed translate, and you see his ability to go and track the football in the air. That's sometimes we make jokes about corners or defensive backs in general that, hey, there's a reason why they play DB. It's because they can't catch. Well, with Robinson, he's a guy that is very instinctual with the ball in the air. And I think that that is a great trait for a guy to play on the outside. So when you look at Aaron Robinson, I think that that really stands out to me. The hard part about it is he doesn't fit necessarily the size profile that the Seahawks want in terms of being over 6 foot. He's barely under 6 foot at 5'11 and a half, and he doesn't have the arm span that the Seahawks typically like. But I think DJ Reed broke the mold for them in a lot of ways, broke a lot of the restrictions that Pete Carroll has for corners and the ideal size. And if you're looking at just the production, the ability, the instincts, I think Aaron Robinson makes a lot of sense here. The next guy that I could see going early in the second, third round of this draft is cornerback out of Kentucky, Kelvin Joseph. Kelvin Joseph is the same thing as Aaron Robinson, 5'11 and a half. He's around 200 pounds, and he is only a redshirt sophomore, Stacy. Redshirt sophomore. He's got a unique story. He was originally signed with LSU coming out of high school and then ended up transferring to Kentucky. And when he was with LSU, he was a big-time contributor on defense and special teams. He had 13 touchdowns in his entire career, collegiate career, in kickoff and punt returns and interception returns. This is a playmaker. This is a guy that when the ball is in his hands, he can take it the distance. So although he is not over 6 foot, he's not a small guy in stature, and he is actually a playmaker. That's one of the things yesterday, if you remember, I liked about Dwayne Eskridge out of Western Michigan, is that he can bring that missing element to the table for the Hawks that I believe that they've been missing, which is a dynamic special teams returner. And I think that that's what Kelvin Joseph could be in terms of sharing his duties at corner and being a great special teams player for you. Guy that's very instinctual, knows how to get his hands on the football. He had 4 interceptions this past season, 1 return for a touchdown, and he decided to opt out of the season the final 2 games of the year due to COVID and also due to just wanting to get ready for the NFL draft. He is very freaky physically, naturally athletic. I really love his natural ball skills and his ability to drive with what he's seeing. He trusts his eyes and drives through the receiver. And I think that the one thing that scares you about him is his inexperience. He is a redshirt sophomore. He hasn't had a ton of years, a ton of background playing the position. But there's a reason why he's being sought after as potentially a second or third round pick in this draft. With that limited experience is because there's so much upside to Kelvin Joseph. So those two guys I could see very easily go in the second or third round of this draft. Let's get to the later round guys, the guys that could potentially be there in the fourth round, maybe even later. Let's go just across the lake here in Montlake, Stacy. Washington cornerback Keith Taylor. Now, Keith Taylor, he does fit the size profile, 6'2", 187 pounds. He's a guy that I think when you talk about the competition at UW and the tradition that's been there with Jimmy Lake at DBU, Keith Taylor has had to be patient, has had to wait for his opportunities. And I think that once he got his opportunity, being a full-time starter his junior year, and then finally you look at what he did there, 59 tackles, 2 tackles for loss, 5 pass breakups. He's working with Will Blackman down in the pre-draft process. And Will Blackman, I've talked to him. He really, really likes Keith Taylor, is very high on him. And so I think that that could be a really easy transition there in Seattle with what the Seahawks like from him. He only ran a 4.5 40, but I do think that they have had success with guys that aren't blazing speed but have great length and great instincts with who they are. So Keith Taylor is one that stands out to me. And then the last one is going to be Ambry Thomas from Michigan. 6 foot, 191 pounds, 32 1/4 inch arms. This guy was a high recruit coming out of high school and was a big time playmaker. And I think that he's a guy that when you talk about his mentality, what stands out to me is that he is a player that doesn't back down from anybody. He is feisty. He's got an attitude. He plays with a lot of toughness. You see him driving on routes and finishing guys to the ground. And I think that he's a guy that when you talk about the Seahawks wanting corners that are willing tacklers, Ambry Thomas jumps off the page in that area for me. And I think that he's a guy that could really do well in this cover 3 zone scheme here in Seattle. So I think that those are 4 guys, Stacy, that stand out to me that I really, really like and I think could fit the profile here in Seattle.
Now, first, taking a step back to look at the Seahawks cornerback room as it stands right now, if the Seahawks do not draft a corner, are you okay with the cornerback room as it is?
No, I'm not.
Why?
Because I don't believe you've got depth there and you've got veteran guys that are trying to make their way. And it's okay if you have guys like that because it brings out great competition and you're hoping that the cream rises to the top in that situation. You have players that have had background in being successful. Akilah Witherspoon, coming off his best year as a pro, has had injury history and consistency issues. That's not something that I feel super confident going into the year. You could say the same thing about Pierre Desir. Although he's had 6 interceptions over the past 2 seasons, he's a player that got cut by the Jets midway through the season last year. Why? I have questions about that. And so you have Demarius Randall, Trey Flowers, DJ Reed. I think DJ Reed has a great opportunity to win the cornerback spot, and I think everybody's expecting him to. But I want to see either a young, talented player that brings speed, that brings instincts, brings playmaking ability, or I want a true veteran like Richard Sherman or Casey Hayward Jr. out there that's going to come in and really solidify that group from the get-go. So I don't think they're done addressing the cornerback position.
All right, last question here for me then. Looking back at these four guys that you have here, Keith Taylor, Ambry Thomas, Kelvin Joseph, and Aaron Robinson. Now, you have them at a couple different spots in the draft. So assuming that no one is overdrafted, meaning you don't have a guy projected in the fifth, it's taken in the second. Assuming someone is taken where you're happy with where he's selected, which player makes you the most excited to be a potential Seahawk?
The player that makes me the most excited, to be quite honest with you, is Kelvin Joseph. And the reason why is because of his ability to return, his ability to not only get his hands on the football, but to intercept the ball. And to be able to make something happen once he gets his hand on the football. And those guys are very few and far between in terms of their ability to be not just good, solid corners, but playmakers. And with Tyler Lockett now being a full-time receiver, that kick return, punt return game has fluctuated. I know you have DJ Reed that's had moments, but if he's going to be your everyday starter and you're counting on him to play corner, you might not want him to be your kick returner. And I think Kelvin Joseph could take that responsibility away as a rookie in this league. And even if he doesn't start, let's say Kelvin Joseph has to sit behind Pierre Desir, or he has to sit behind Akilah Witherspoon to start the year, he can still have a role on this team as a specialist, as a returner, and I think he can be pretty darn impactful by that.
That is Jake's Seahawks Draft Prospect Profiles. He has a ton of these, you guys, so if you are someone that wants to binge a bunch of content before next Thursday's draft, this is how you do it. You, first of all, go to 710sports.com. We have a ton of great stuff there from all of our hosts who have written some stuff. Jake has stuff on there. Danny has stuff. I have stuff. Brandon Gustafson, who is the 710sports.com reporter, he has a ton of draft content on there. Jake also has his draft prospect profiles that kick off every third hour of Jake and Stacy. He's taken a look at edge rushers, wide receivers, pretty much every position you could think of. So go check it out there. Good stuff, Jake. Good stuff. All right, jumping into some NFL headlines. I'm going to start here just because it's the most interesting story to me. So recently retired quarterback Alex Smith did an interview with Sports Illustrated. I read through it. It's a great interview. I do recommend it. It's a longer read, so don't do it right now. Don't pull over to the side of the road, pull out your phone and read it. Just save it for later, bookmark it for later. But in it, he says he felt, quote, patronized by Washington's coaching staff during the 2020 season. So let me add a little bit of context here. Smith says in the article that he can totally understand why a team would be really nervous about playing him. He's like, I get it. Like, the people that were working on my leg and my recovery in the hospital were military doctors that had been working with traumatic injuries and wartime injuries, and they had seen recoveries unlike what the average NFL or just average doctor would see. I know why my team doctors and why my team wouldn't want to feel responsible for me getting hurt again. But he says he felt patronizing in that it seemed that they preferred a story where his comeback was enough. Like, his ability to just be on an NFL roster was enough. Mm-hmm. And for him, he's like, I wanted more. I wanted to be back on the field. And I felt physically that I could. And I felt like they kept doing things when there wasn't a medical reason to do it outside of their own fear for doing it. For instance, he was put on the physically unable to perform list, even though he was doing all of these physical things in camp and doing extra work in camp and all this stuff. And even though his own doctors had cleared him, and they weren't like personal private doctors. These were like doctors in a hospital had cleared him. And there was no medical reason he felt that he couldn't be out there. So I get where he's coming from. Initially hearing this, I thought, well, gosh, if I'm, Ron Rivera, I completely understand. I don't think it's patronizing to look at. I mean, every time Alex Smith was out there, I was nervous as a fan. Just watching Washington football play its games, I was nervous. I understand why a head coach would say, I don't want this young man to be out here and actually lose his leg, which he was in such danger of doing. For him, it was more about, they wanted his story to be done, and he knew it wasn't.
I get that as a player, but at the same time, I think taking shots at this organization or taking shots at the staff, I just think it's a bad move. It rubs me the wrong way. No, duh. Like, you're acknowledging their point. You were just coming off of a severe leg injury, and guess what? I'm sorry, Alex. You weren't a part of their long-term plans. They wanted to see what they had in Dwayne Haskins. They wanted to see if Kyle Allen, a guy that Ron Rivera and the offensive coordinator really liked in Carolina, and wanted to see if he could be a guy that could step up and play that role that you ended up playing there in Washington, right? They weren't expecting Kyle Allen to go out there and be this amazing quarterback and win a bunch of games on his back, but could he be a good game manager with the type of defense that they had? You know, that's what they were hoping Kyle Allen could be. And so I don't blame Ron Rivera or that staff whatsoever, as long as they weren't like talking to him like he was, you know, somebody that was in a wheelchair or something like that. I mean, I just get, if they don't want to play you, you did end up retiring after the season, right? So you were on the tail end of your career. So I think there's a lot more credit that should be given to Ron Rivera and Washington for how they've handled the situation than I guess than Alex is giving them. I get it from a competitor.
Yes.
It would be infuriating to feel like you could be on the field and be better than what you're seeing in front of you with these young guys. But I wouldn't blame the organization.
I think what this is like the personality type. It's how I felt about so many of the personalities of former Seahawks. The personality type that Alex Smith possesses, the level of competitor he is that allowed him to make his comeback, isn't in line with someone that would be like, oh, no hurt feelings. You know what I mean? Like, someone that's that insanely competitive and driven is going to feel kind of jilted by people not believing in him and not seeing the vision he has for himself. Like,
right.
That type of person that's able to make that comeback is going to have such a sense of self-belief that it makes sense he'd think that about Ron Rivera. I hope that they smooth things over in the future.
Well, I do too, but I don't think there would be anything that Ron Rivera or Washington could do to smooth that over. That's got to be Alex Smith on his part and saying, look, I get it.
Yeah.
I understand. I just don't understand why he's taking shots. That to me is the part that's a little puzzling to me. Is saying that, hey, I felt like the whole time I could have been playing and playing at a high level and winning games for them. It was hard for me to sit back and watch that. Acting like it was patronizing, it's taking it to a different level to me that I don't think is very fair.
Now, we mentioned this when Michael Bumpus was on with us to kick off the noon hour, but circling back to this news from Adam Schefter, Kansas City traded its first round pick Thursday evening, last evening, along with three other picks in 21 and 22 to the Ravens in exchange for Pro Bowl offensive tackle Orlando Brown. They also got a pick in 2021 and another in 2022. So a couple draft picks mingled in there, but the Chiefs continue to bolster their offensive line. Jake, you said something that I think is true and I agree with you on. It has been fascinating to watch, and this isn't necessarily a slight towards Seattle or any other team that hasn't been able to do this while paying a quarterback a lot of money, because Patrick Mahomes' contract still hasn't fully kicked in yet, or at its full value yet. But I think there was a lot of assuming that when the Seahawks parted ways with their two veteran tackles, both of whom were coming off of injuries,
This is
the cost of doing business when you're paying a quarterback that much. And then they ended up spending $80 million to bring in Joe Tooney and bringing in a ton of other guys, and now could have, on paper, one of the better offensive lines in football. You got to make it pay off, but
right.
They spared no penny for sure.
And also, they have an opportunity with the Ravens, probably at I think they're the 58th pick in the draft this year, because they lose out their first round selection and they get a second round selection. So if you look at that situation, they have an opportunity to still go out and draft a really good center, right? Like, if they somehow were to get Quinn Meinertz or Creed Humphreys in this situation, I would lose my mind.
Would your head literally explode?
It might explode. I mean, it'd be a great job by them and their organization, but I never understood why people would think that they would go inexpensive with their offensive line when it's a point of emphasis for Andy Reid and their offense. Yes, they have great skill players. Yes, they have a great quarterback. But offensive line play matters to Andy Reid. Always has, always will. And they were extremely aggressive in trying to fulfill that need. And I don't think they're necessarily done trying to fill that need in the draft.
I would bet they also have rewatched that Super Bowl loss against Tampa
no
Bay
doubt.
A million times, and have pointed to the offensive line. And obviously it was, hey, Eric Fisher, we lost him to an Achilles tear. You know, Schwartz, was also injured. And so yes, there were injuries, but you can just see, like, if that was better, think of what could have been. Because Patrick Mahomes was under pressure. Mm-hmm. I think it was more than any other quarterback in the last several years. It was, like, some insane number. I'm throwing 24%, though I think it was actually much higher than that. I don't know why I'm thinking 24%.
It was absurd. And if you're the Chiefs, you feel like you've got a really good group, a really good nucleus, and a group that can go back and get to the Super Bowl if they're able to better protect Patrick Mahomes. And that's exactly what their plan has been and what they're doing, and kudos to them.
All right, two bits of news about the Browns, one of which could affect the Seattle Seahawks. Curious to get your guys' opinion on this. Browns head coach Kevin Stefanski said he hoped Sheldon Richardson would consider re-signing with Cleveland. Now, obviously, is there a chance Richardson reunites with Seattle? He did have a one-year stint here. Maybe. Seattle has already bolstered up the interior of its line, so I don't know if they would spend money there, but certainly a name to keep an eye on, especially considering that he has already been with Seattle for a year. Other news, the Browns have picked up their fifth-year options on both Baker Mayfield and Denzel Ward. Question about Mayfield. Do you think that Mayfield, we have seen very much his ceiling, or do you think it'll be a Josh Allen-esque? They're very different quarterbacks, size and strengths, but do you think we're going to see a Josh Allen-esque next level that he reaches?
No, I don't. I think you've seen who Baker Mayfield can be, and I think that there is, with Baker Mayfield, he can improve on the year that he had, but I don't see him turning into a Josh Allen, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, just special type of player that can really truly put a team on his back for an entire season. I think he could be a good quarterback in this league, and I think he fits a great role in terms of what Kevin Stefanski put him in, is not necessarily a game manager, but a guy that doesn't have the world on his shoulders each and every single game, because you can hand the ball off to Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt and let that ground game work. But I think that, you know, Baker Mayfield here this last year, 3,500 yards, 26 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, I think that's right in line with who he is and what he can be in this league on a consistent basis.
What I need to know coming up in 15 minutes, here's what you need to do. Send your questions in, any question you want. You can have more than one question. You can have 10 questions. Send them in, 710-710, any question you want. What I need to know coming up in 15 minutes. Before that, though, you cannot count these Mariners out. The 2021 Mariners, everything we've learned so far through the first month of the season. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Curtis, you purposely turned your mic on in my ear when you said that. They were both making fun of me because apparently I'm loud. I don't actually think I'm that loud.
Okay.
I think I just try to make sure people can hear me.
Mm-hmm.
And I also don't think I have great hearing. And then you said...
Well, yeah, that's because you're old.
I don't think that's what it is, Curtis.
I'll take you to get your hearing checked later.
Okay. You walked right
into
that
fine.
One.
Yeah, I really did. I did. There's a couple things we've learned about the Mariners so far through a month. Do you remember when you were in, any school level, but like elementary school or whatever, you would have early check-in. So you don't just get your final grade. They do like a little quarterly report. Maybe they do, first month of school, this is how Stacy's doing. Her strengths are that she's really nice. Her flaws are she doesn't share with children and blah, blah, blah. Whatever kind of feedback you guys
used
to get.
Side-talking volume.
I don't remember. Look, it's all a blur to me. Let's look at the Mariners and see what we've learned through the first month of the season. One of the things I think that we have learned, you can't count them out. You cannot count them out. They have taken all but one of their series so far. I'm not counting the Dodgers, which I didn't put in the win or loss column. They just split a two-game series. So I do think that's impressive, but for the purpose of saying...
Dang it, I'm counting it.
Fine, you can count it.
The World Series
in that case, you just split a series, you lost a series, you have won every other series that you've been in. That is a fantastic start to the season, and a lot of those have been on comebacks. They've been in extras where, I think, are they 4-0 in extras? 3-0 in extras?
3-0 in extras.
It is a wonderful start to the season for the Mariners. So we're going to do our own little, not a progress report, a little check-in to see what we've learned so far, Jake.
To me, what I've learned so far is that Mitch Haniger is an all-star player yet again. Like, he's a guy that when you talk about his ability to carry a team, Mitch is putting that on full display at the beginning. And we didn't know how this was going to go. I mean, it's been a year and a half, right? Has it been a year and a half or 2 years?
For Mitch, almost 2 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been a long time since he's played ball, and he came out from the get-go ready to go. And that just is a tip of the cap to him and his preparation. And I know he takes this as seriously as anybody out there in the league in terms of his preparation. Hence, some of the reason why his process has been delayed, because he's such a hard worker and kind of overworked himself. But it's great to see him back out there and playing. And then you got Ty France, who everybody before the season, man, Ty France, he can really hit. Ty France, this, that. He has proven that he can bring that legitimately to the big league level and do that at an incredible clip. And if he can sustain that throughout the rest of the season, you're going to feel really, really good about what you have in Ty France.
Pavetta set, and the 2-2 to France. Breaking ball, swing on, line drive, left field, over the head of the left fielder. Crawford will score easily. Haniger in high gear, he comes around. Here's a throw to the plate. It will be cut off by the pitcher. They got France hung up between second and third, but he'll yield. Gives a fist bump to Devers. He gets the job done, ties the score 2-2. What a big spot here in the sixth inning. Ty France coming up large again for the Mariners.
And you play that clip, and what has really stood out for me with those two guys is not to, in baseball, you can have great hitters. You can have great hitters, and it doesn't matter. If you can't bring them in, they've brought in the runs themselves. Whether it's home runs or RBIs, just clutch hitting. Ty France and Mitch Haniger have been there so far to start the season, and I love it, and I don't think that's going to go away.
Curtis, what about you? What have you learned so far about the Mariners?
I've learned that this bullpen...
And yourself.
What I've learned about myself... You know, there are times when, I would say the bullpen.
To not doubt Rafael Montero?
I'm still doubting him.
No,
I will
Curtis,
be doubting
I
him.
I want him to prove you wrong.
If he can string together five straight scoreless outings, then I will not doubt Rafael Montero. Until then, the doubt will be there.
Okay.
And who's to say, even if he does, you know, string those five together, there still might be some doubt. But to me, that bullpen is going to be a big reason why the Mariners take a step ahead, because last year we saw the starting pitching look pretty good at times, but when that bullpen came in, there was no telling how that game was going to go, and for the most part, it was bad. It was all bad.
Yeah, you could turn the TV off, basically.
Exactly.
Like, you knew it was going to end
But poorly. This year, if you have a lead in the sixth and seventh inning and you hand it over to the bullpen, for the most part this year, they have converted. They have made those late leads, they've been converted those into victories. If this bullpen is what we think it could be right now, that could really set this team up to maybe make a turn here, because you're just making it so much easier on yourself rather than, you know, giving up late leads. Also, you know, we're seeing a foundational piece before our eyes in Ty France. This is somebody whose bat needs to be in the lineup every single day, and he has been in the lineup every single day except for that one where he got hurt, took the pitch off his forearm. That is a bat that can play every single day, whether it be a DH, third base, first base, whatever. Get his bat in the lineup and just send a thank you card to AJ Preller and the Padres around this year's trade deadline, because that is one of the best trades that Jerry DePoto's ever made.
And I don't think Austin Nola has made a start for them yet, right? Because
he's
got
been
a
hurt.
Broken finger or hand. Do you still have the lineup up, by the way?
The only notable difference in today's lineup is Sam Haggerty getting the start in left field. Obviously coming up with the clutch hit yesterday in extra innings. He'll get the start because it's against a lefty, Martin Perez. Taylor Trammell get the night off.
All right, so don't read too much into it, people. I know that I would like to see more from Taylor Trammell, although he has been flashing at times. So I'm waiting to see about him. Speaking of things we've learned, I think that's maybe one of them is like, hey, Taylor Trammell's going to have a learning curve. Like, the excitement is there because it's such a fun story, but like the learning curve will also be there in his adjustment to the bigs. What I need to know is coming up next, here's how it works. You guys already know. Send your question, any question, multiple questions, if you want, for me, Curtis, and John, into 710.
Jake,
710.
Stop.
Sorry,
it,
you
Tracy.
Were gone for so long that we forgot. It's like you abandoned us. You can't blame us for for just taking a minute to readjust to you being back. Jeez Louise. All right, send those questions in to 710-710. What I need to know, coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by Allred Heating, Cooling, Electric. Get your questions in, 710-710. What I Need to Know, will the third most receiving yards on the Seahawks come from a tight end, a running back, or a receiver? I hope it's a receiver, just because I would hope that those are deep threat options, and it is just more difficult for the average tight end to go against a team's speedy corner and beat him out. So, I do hope it's a receiver. Right now, I'm going to guess tight end.
Jake. Okay. It's hard because it's TBD. Like, right now, we don't know who that third receiver is going to be. Is it going to be someone that they bring in free agency?
Let's
is it someone that they're in the draft?
The group they have right now.
Okay, the group that they have right now, then hands down, I think it's going to be tight end.
All right.
I think it's very easy that it's going to be one of those tight ends, and most likely Gerald Everett.
Now, the segment is What I Need to Know, but Chris and Enumclaw says, What I Need You to Know. Jake, you don't need to take that abuse from Stacy. Chris, I'll have you know something. First of all, Jake is big and grown. He can handle it. Secondly,
I'm a grown
man. They gang up on me all the time. 99.999% of the time, it is 2 against 1. I am just shooting arrows here, but to bring them back down to earth.
Don't you bring it upon yourself a lot,
no.
Stacy?
In what way, Curtis, would I ever bring it upon myself?
Just in the way you operate.
1,000%. Yes.
That's not a fact.
You leave it the door open all of the time. All the time.
What I need to know, what is one snack and one drink that you'd have with you if you were stuck on a deserted island forever? Oh, that's sad. Christian, he would bring regular Lay's and Pacific Cooler Capri Sun. One snack, one drink. That is all you get. And also, You have no friends and family because it's just you alone on a deserted island forever. One snack. I would bring a LaCroix.
A LaCroix? Are
I would
you
bring
serious?
Sparkling water.
You'd bring like
sparkling water.
Flavorless flavored water.
I know
water.
What I would bring. I would bring sparkling water, and I would bring
a bougie deserted island.
Annie's organic cheddar squares.
You're going LaCroix and something organic. Wow.
This is terrible.
That's what you mean, isn't it?
Yes, it's exactly what I mean.
Oh, what are you going to bring? Apple juice and Uncrustables?
Sounds fine to me.
That would be better than what you brought by far. Man, that's a good one.
I think I would go. So, I don't know if this counts as a drink per se, but I love those like water bottle lemonade packets where you just rip it open. You got a bottle
like
of water.
Like a Crystal Light?
Yeah, can you bring that with you to this deserted island? It's two items.
But, okay, I'll allow it. Let's assume there's a freshwater source on that island.
Yeah.
Fine. Okay,
I'm bringing Crystal Light packets with me.
But it's not sparkling. Jake,
yeah, I don't mind that it's not sparkling.
Mm.
My wife has converted me to Diet Coke.
Diet Coke's
met her,
so good.
She drank an obscene amount of Diet Coke every
day. There's no obscene amount.
No. Like, seriously. It was like a 7-Eleven. They had those big old...
The big gulps.
The big gulps, and then there was like the souvenir... Like jugs
like
that you brought.
Plastic
yes.
jug?
Yes.
Like the
wow.
giant ones. I'm talking about the giant ones. She would have one a day. I was like, this is insane. Like, we've got to cut this back. Like, this is no way this is healthy. So Diet Coke and then a snack. I lean towards candy, but that's not really a snack.
I'll allow it if that's really what you want to bring more than anything
else.
No,
if I'm going to have a snack, I'm going to go with Cheez-Its.
Okay, that's mine are one. Close to that. It's just with organic wheat instead of, you know, okay.
Yeah, no.
What I need to know, am I crazy for wanting the Hawks to use their first pick on an impact defensive tackle?
No, you're not crazy because I think it actually would be a good addition. I do believe that it is a need. And the part about Alden Smith is that you don't know what that puzzle piece is going to, how it's going to fit. Because if they use him as more of a Sam linebacker, five technique defensive end, then who at that five technique spot, Kerry Hyder, O.J. Collier, Rasheen Green, you would expect one of those guys to slide down and play defensive tackle. If you don't have Alden Smith there, then what I think it forces you to do is you have to look at that defensive tackle position a little bit more heavily. And I think there are some intriguing guys in the second, third round of the draft potentially that are out there. And so I will definitely put that position on a profile next week before the draft, because that's definitely a sneaky need that they have. I just don't know if they're going to prioritize it in the draft with as limited of picks as they have.
What I need to know, what was the very first car you owned?
98 Jeep Cherokee. Drove that thing into the ground.
Good one.
The only reason
those
I'm
will
not
last forever.
The only reason I'm not driving it now is because it got stolen.
It got stolen?
It got stolen, yeah.
Aww.
When I lived in Portland.
It's terrible.
Found it back, or we got it back, but it was deemed a total loss. Got a really nice insurance check. Shout out to Geico.
Okay.
Holding it down for your boy.
Jake, do you remember
Geico
yours?
Doing it right? Do I remember?
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
Sorry, my bad.
Yes. Actually, I had a 2001 Mercedes-Benz.
Oh.
My first
wow.
Car.
Wow. Excuse
did you get that from a booster
me.
Or something?
No.
After my visit to Tennessee,
no,
I got a 2001 Mercedes-Benz.
No.
Uh-huh, sure.
I mean, it was 2010 at the time.
Okay. I had
no.
a
certified pre-owned.
2000...
A lot of boosters operate car dealerships.
I also had a 2001. It was not a Mercedes-Benz. It was a Pontiac Grand Prix.
Nice.
And it was white, and it had a leak on the left side, passenger side. And so when it rained, it would fill with water in the passenger side, like where your feet go. And so I would have a solo cup that I would keep in the car. And when I got in my car, I would have to cup water out of it.
You're kidding me.
No. So people would get in my car, like
wow.
if I was driving home from work and someone was like, can I get a ride? And I have to be like, oh, weird. This leak just started in my car. I got to take it in. Oh, my God. So embarrassing.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I always hate saying that when people ask me that question, because it makes it seem like I got this incredible car for as expensive as it was, but it wasn't really that expensive at the time. Got a
yeah, because it's from a booster.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was free. It was given
it was
to you.
It was free from someone that
yeah,
wanted you to go to Bama.
I will say it was awesome because you drove around, you just felt like $1 million. But yeah, that car broke down on me real fast.
What I need to know, if you played Major League Baseball, what would be your walk up to the plate song from the 253?
Easy.
Really? It's easy for you?
Easy.
Wow.
A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood by Mr. Rogers.
No way. No
way.
It's
my last name.
It is true. That's great. Man.
Curtis, you would have that. What's that song you always play when Jake wants to get hyped up for games on Friday?
Thunderstruck?
Yeah, Thunderstruck.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that'd be Jake's.
Like, no, that's what I said.
Yeah.
Jake, you would be, and then I couldn't remember. It was like AC/DC or something.
Yeah, Back in Black is always... Back in Black would be a good one, too. Just that walk-up music. But that's tough. Do you want to stay relevant? Do you want to go old school? Like, there's a lot of options there.
Yeah.
It's hard.
I think this song right here would be Stacey's, because she knows it so well.
So incredibly well.
Both of you, this joke will never die. It will never go away. See, this is what I mean, Chris and Ian Claw.
Like,
this is
not,
what I have to put up with every day.
How did you not know The Weeknd, the most popular song at the time?
Because I hadn't been listening to it.
Oh,
I
wait,
been
actually, I know
it.
What Stacey's would be.
No, Curtis.
Oh yeah.
Yes, it would.
It's
Let's
the
go.
Home Depot theme.
Let's go. Oh, I love the Home Depot.
Home Depot. Get you pumped.
New outro song. This has been Jake and Stacey. He's Jake Heaps. Curtis Rogers on the board. I'm Stacey Ross. Do not go anywhere. Wyman and Bob is coming your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.